And welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the program today, Dan Friedel and Ashley Thompson take us on an exploration of American barbecue. As always, we close our program with an American story. Today, we hear The Cup and the Anthem by O. Henry. But first, a story from Asia. Taiwan's legislature received world attention this month. It was not, however, the result of laws the parliament passed. Instead, the world watched lawmakers fighting. Over 2 years, aggressive actions such as pushing, throwing chairs, and physically seizing others have not been reported to the parliament's discipline committee. Its executive secretary recently said that the committee has the power to suspend lawmakers who take part in such behavior. Liu Yijun is a public issues professor at Fuquan University in Taiwan. He told VOA, "A dogfight between the members of the House in Taiwan is legal." Liu said, "The committee never orders any physical or legal actions to try to control the behavior of lawmakers." He said, "This is true even when people are badly hurt." Taiwan is known for its physical legislative fights. They often start with opposition members blocking the path of majority party members as they try to reach a podium. When the majority party pushes back, some lawmakers hit, grab, pull neckties, and throw objects. Last December, 3 people were sent to the hospital after a parliamentary fight. Experts say fighting continues in Taiwan, partly because political parties are unwilling to share power or accept that they lack power. Also, voters in Taiwan expect their lawmakers to stand strong on sensitive issues, such as Taiwan's relations with China. And some lawmakers have said the fights are not always real. They say some are planned to get attention. Taiwan's legislature in central Taipei lacks a security official called a sergeant at arms. This official supervises behavior at meetings and can remove people when necessary. Liu said the past 2 legislative leaders, called speakers, have been, in his words, kind of weak and lacking in political wisdom needed to settle disputes peacefully. This month, opposition lawmakers pushed people and seized the podium to block the Finance Committee chairman from reaching it. The chairman called a recess.
For some Americans, summertime means visiting the beaches or national parks. For others, it means attending baseball games. And for many, it means cooking, eating, and generally enjoying American barbecue. Barbecue, or BBQ for short, is a style of cooking meat at a low temperature for a long time. But not all American barbecue is the same. Mike Sargent recently drove almost 2,500 kilometers from Texas to Washington, D.C. to compete in the National Capital Barbecue Battle. As a Texan, Sargent says his home state makes the best barbecue.
Texas is part of America's barbecue belt. The area stretches from Texas to the East Coast. Many people divide it into four main styles of American barbecue: Carolina style, Memphis style, Kansas City style, and Texas style. Robert F. Moss is a barbecue expert and historian. He wrote the book, Barbecue: The History of an American Institution. Moss says American barbecue is much more than just the four main styles. He says many areas within the barbecue belt have their own styles and flavors.
David Robbins is with Old Town Smokers, a restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia. He is their pitmaster, the person who operates the barbecue cooking pit. He says that for people who come from places where barbecue is popular, there is a lot of regional pride.
Usually it's not because it's the favorite flavor, it's because it's the thing that they grew up with.
Moss says American barbecue developed from several cultures in the Caribbean. Early European explorers observed Taino Indians in the Caribbean cooking whole animals over fire and smoke. They called it barabiku, or sacred pit, in the Taino language. Spanish explorers called this cooking method barbacoa. As they traveled north, they spread barbacoa into the present-day Southern American states, like Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. There, barbacoa became barbecue. In the 1920s, the restaurant industry grew quickly in the United States. It was this rise in restaurants, Moss says, that helped lead to the creation of regional barbecue styles.
Carolina-style barbecue is named after the states of North Carolina and South Carolina. Carolina barbecue today is the closest to the early colonial style of barbecue of the 1700s, Moss says. All across the Carolinas, pork is the main barbecue meat. They cook the whole hog over a pit. The pork meat is then shredded or chopped or pulled. Pulled pork is meat that is tender or soft enough to be pulled from the bone with little effort. Sauce is a key part of American barbecue. Most sauces in North Carolina have a vinegar base. In South Carolina, most sauces are made with mustard. They are yellow in color. The mustard-based sauce is known as Carolina Gold. From the Carolinas, barbecue traditions moved west, all the way to Texas.
While Carolina-style barbecue is all about pork, Texas-style barbecue is all about beef. Texas is especially known for its smoked brisket. Brisket is a cut of meat from the lower chest of a cow, as pitmaster Mike Sargent explains.
It's the chest and shoulder muscle. It's a very thick, tough piece of meat, that it has to be cooked for long periods of time at lower temperatures.
Most Texas barbecue cooks do not use much barbecue sauce. Instead, they flavor their meat with a mix of herbs and spices called a rub.
We don't put a lot of sauce on anything down there. We'd rather you taste the meat and the seasonings and the woods that we use.
Texas-style barbecue is often cooked over pecan wood. Pecan trees are found across much of Texas.
The city of Memphis, Tennessee, is home to another well-known style of American barbecue. Memphis-style barbecue may be best known for its pork ribs. The ribs can be served dry, without sauce, or wet, with sauce. Memphis-style sauce is sometimes very sweet, thanks to molasses, a thick, dark syrup made from raw sugar. Because the city sits along the Mississippi River, it was easy for locals to get molasses from steamboats that regularly carried goods up and down the river. Memphis-style barbecue led to the creation of Kansas City-style barbecue because of one man, Henry Perry. The Memphis local worked as a steamboat cook. In the early 1900s, he moved north to Kansas City. Perry soon began cooking and serving barbecue for people in his new city. He went on to build a very successful Kansas City barbecue business.
Kansas City is where Carolina and Memphis pork barbecue meet Texas beef barbecue. It is, as some food experts say, the best of both worlds. While it is best known for its pork ribs, Kansas City also does beef brisket. It is known for its thick, tomato-based sauce that is both sweet and spicy. Barbecue has become serious business in Kansas City. It holds the so-called World Series of Barbecue every fall. The huge contest is called the American Royal.
But barbecue is not about competition. It is about eating. If cooked right, barbecued meat falls off the bone. You do not need to use a fork or knife to eat it. Usually, you can eat it with your hands. Rebecca Sansale is from Pennsylvania. At the National Capital Barbecue Battle in Washington, D.C., she said barbecue is one of her favorite kinds of food.
It's one of the foods that you can eat that is really messy, and it's okay to get it kind of all over your face, and it's just really fun to eat.
A traditional American barbecue usually includes side dishes like potato salad, coleslaw, baked beans, or macaroni and cheese.
Chuck Smith is a cook at Smoke Shack, a barbecue restaurant in Columbus, Ohio.
I got potato salad, coleslaw, greens, beans, macaroni cheese. The macaroni cheese is off the hook. It's off the hook. It's so cheesy and it's good.
Off the hook means really, really good. In summer months, people in the United States often invite friends and family members over for a barbecue. They cook meat outside on a grill and prepare side dishes similar to Chuck Smith's. Pitmasters like Sargent and Robbins did not learn their trade at cooking schools. Instead, they learned through family barbecues in their own backyards. Sargent says in Texas, everybody has a grill in the backyard.
That's where I learned my passion from. And my dad taught me at an early age how to cook on a grill. And that's where I found my passion for it.
I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
The Cop and the Anthem. Soapy moved restlessly on his seat in Madison Square. There are certain signs to show that winter is coming. Birds begin to fly south. Women who want nice, new, warm coats become very kind to their husbands. And Soapy moves restlessly on his seat in the park. When you see these signs, you know that winter is near. A dead leaf fell at Soapy's feet. That was a special sign for him that winter was coming. It was time for all who lived in Madison Square to prepare. Soapy's mind now realized the fact. The time had come. He had to find some way to take care of himself during the cold weather, and therefore he moved restlessly on his seat. Soapy's hopes for the winter were not very high. He was not thinking of sailing away on a ship. He was not thinking of southern skies or the Bay of Naples. 3 months in the prison on Blackwell's Island was what he wanted. 3 months of food every day and a bed every night. 3 months safe from the cold north wind and safe from cops. This seemed to Soapy the most desirable thing in the world. For years, Blackwell's Island had been his winter home. Richer New Yorkers made their large plans to go to Florida or to the shore of the Mediterranean Sea each winter. Soapy made his small plans for going to the island. And now the time had come. 3 big newspapers, some under his coat and some over his legs, had not kept him warm during the night in the park, so Soapy was thinking of the island. There were places in the city where he could go and ask for food and a bed. These would be given to him. He could move from one building to another, and he would be taken care of through the winter. But he liked Blackwell's Island better. Soapy's spirit was proud. If he went to any of these places, there were certain things he had to do. In one way or another, he would have to pay for what they gave him. They would not ask him for money, but they would make him wash his whole body. They would make him answer questions. They would want to know everything about his life. No, prison was better than that. The prison had rules that he would have to follow, but in prison a gentleman's own life was still his own life. Soapy, having decided to go to the island, at once began to move toward his desire. There were many easy ways of doing this. The most pleasant way was to go and have a good dinner at some fine restaurant. Then he would say that he had no money to pay, and then a cop would be called. It would all be done very quietly. The cop would arrest him, he would be taken to a judge, the judge would do the rest. Soapy left his seat and walked out of Madison Square to the place where the great street called Broadway and Fifth Avenue meet. He went across this wide space and started north on Broadway. He stopped at a large and brightly lighted restaurant. This was where the best food and the best people and the best clothes appeared every evening. Soapy believed that above his legs, he looked all right. His face was clean, his coat was good enough. If he could get to a table, he believed that success would be his. The part of him that would be seen above the table would look all right. The waiter would bring him what he asked for. He began thinking of what he would like to eat. In his mind, he could see the whole dinner. the cost would not be too high. He did not want the restaurant people to feel any real anger, but the dinner would leave him filled and happy for the journey to his winter home. But as Soapy put his foot inside the restaurant door, the head waiter saw his broken old shoes and torn clothes that covered his legs. Strong and ready hands turned Soapy around and moved him quietly and quickly outside again. Soapy turned off Broadway. It seemed that this easy, this most desirable way to get to the island was not to be his. He must think of some other way of getting there. At a corner of 6th Avenue was a shop with a wide glass window bright with electric lights. Soapy picked up a big stone and threw it through the glass. People came running around the corner. A cop was the first among them. Soapy stood still and smiled when he saw the cop. "Where's the man that did that?" asked the cop. "Hey, don't you think that I might have done it?" said Soapy. He was friendly and happy. What he wanted was coming toward him. But the cop's mind would not consider Soapy. Men who break windows do not stop there to talk to cops. They run away as fast as they can. The cop saw a man further along the street running. He ran after him. And Soapy, sick at heart, walked slowly away. He had failed 2 times. Across the street was another restaurant. It was not so fine as the one on Broadway. The people who went there were not so rich. Its food was not so good. Into this, Soapy took his old shoes and his torn clothes, and no one stopped him. He sat down at a table and was soon eating a big dinner. When he had finished, he said that he and Money were strangers. "Yeah, get busy and call a cop," said Soapy. "And don't keep a gentleman waiting."
"No cop for you," said the waiter.
He called another waiter. The two waiters threw Soapy upon his left ear on the hard street outside. He stood up slowly, one part at a time, and beat the dust from his clothes. Prison seemed only a happy dream. The island seemed very far away. A cop who was standing near laughed and walked away. Soapy traveled almost half a mile before he tried again. This time he felt very certain that he would be successful. A nice-looking young woman was standing before a shop window looking at the objects inside. Very near stood a large cop. Soapy's plan was to speak to the young woman. She seemed to be a very nice young lady who would not want a strange man to speak to her. She would ask the cop for help. And then Soapy would be happy to feel the cop's hand on his arm. He would be on his way to the island. He went near her. He could see that the cop was already watching him. The young woman moved away a few steps. Soapy followed. Standing beside her, he said, "Good evening, Bedelia. Don't you want to come and play with me?" The cop was still looking. The young woman had only to move her hand and Soapy would be on his way to the place where he wanted to go. He was already thinking how warm he would be. The young woman turned to him. Putting out her hand, she took his arm.
"Sure, Mike," she said joyfully. "If you'll buy me something to drink, I would have spoken to you sooner, but the cop was watching."
With the young woman holding his arm, Soapy walked past the cop. He was filled with sadness. He was still free. Was he going to remain free forever? At the next corner, he pulled his arm away and ran. When he stopped, he was near several theaters. In this part of the city, streets are brighter, and hearts are more joyful than in other parts. Women and men in rich, warm coats moved happily in the winter air. A sudden fear caught Soapy. No cop was going to arrest him. Then he came to another cop standing in front of a big theater. He thought of something else to try. He began to shout as if he had had too much to drink. His voice was as loud as he could make it. He danced and cried out. And the cop turned his back to Soapy and said to a man standing near him, "It's one of those college boys. He won't be hurting anything. We had orders to let him shout." Soapy was quiet. Was no cop going to touch him? He began to think of the island as if it were as far away as heaven. He pulled his thin coat around him. The wind was very cold. Then he saw a man in the shop buying a newspaper. The man's umbrella stood beside the door. Soapy stepped inside the shop, took the umbrella, and walked slowly away. The man followed him quickly.
"My umbrella," he said.
"Oh, is it?" said Soapy.
"Why don't you call a cop? I took it. Your umbrella. Why don't you call a cop? There's one standing at the corner."
The man walked more slowly. Soapy did the same, but he had a feeling that he was going to fail again. The cop looked at the two men.
"I," said the umbrella man, "that is, you know how these things happen. If that's your umbrella, I'm very sorry. I found it this morning in a restaurant. If you say it's yours, I hope you'll..."
"It's mine," cried Soapy with anger in his voice. The umbrella man hurried away. The cop helped a lady across the street. Soapy walked east. He threw the umbrella as far as he could throw it. He talked to himself about cops and what he thought of them. Because he wished to be arrested, they seemed to believe he was like a king who could do no wrong. At last, Soapy came to one of the quiet streets on the east side of the city. He turned here and began to walk south towards Madison Square. He was going home, although home was only a seat in the park. But on a very quiet corner, Soapy stopped. There was an old, old church. Through one of the colored glass windows came a soft light. Sweet music came to Soapy's ears and seemed to hold him there. The moon was above, peaceful and bright. There were few people passing. He could hear birds high above him. And the anthem that came from the church held Soapy there, for he had known it well long ago. In those days, his life contained such things as mothers and flowers and high hopes and friends and clean thoughts and clean clothes. Soapy's mind was ready for something like this. He had come to the old church at the right time. There was a sudden and wonderful change in his soul. He saw with sick fear how he had fallen. He saw his worthless days, his wrong desires, his dead hopes, his lost power of his mind. And also in a moment, his heart answered this change in his soul. He would fight to change his life. He would pull himself up out of the mud. He would make a man of himself again. There was time. He was young enough. He would find his old purpose in life and follow it. That sweet music had changed him. Tomorrow he would find work. A man had once offered him a job. He would find that man tomorrow. He would be somebody in the world. He would... Soapy felt a hand on his arm. He looked quickly around into the broad face of a cop.
"What are you doing hanging around here?" asked the cop.
"Nothing," said Soapy.
"You think I believe that?" said the cop.
Full of his new strength, Soapy began to argue. And it is not wise to argue with a New York cop.
"Come along," said the cop.
"3 months on the island," said the judge to Soapy the next morning.
That's all the time we have for the show today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.